Welcome everybody to this open access workshop today. Open access is a very important topic, not only in this university, but all universities. It is obviously that research is funded by public money, and then also the publication should be publicly available, as the name says, publication. And therefore, this is under discussion in many universities right now. It should also increase the international visibility of our researchers. It's the interest of our university, of course, and should also solve the problem of long-term archiving. Therefore, this university has signed the Berlin Declaration already many years ago, I think 10 years ago, because even at that time we considered this a very important topic. In Austria, we have an open access network Austria, because we want to join forces in Austria on this topic. And at our university, we have a special project that we have started last year in order to pool all the efforts that we are doing in the various units and institutions at this university to get a common policy, a common approach to this topic. In general, we are not as far advanced in terms of open access as we would like to be, and we are grateful that we have some experts today here so that we can learn something and can get discussions and can get a better overview and to see where we want to go to in this university. So, and I would like to present our first speaker. This is Professor Marie Farsch. Is this the right pronunciation?
Yeah.
She's a mathematician and physicist. She's the research director at the Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique, CNRS, in France. The CNRS is the largest fundamental research organization in Europe with about 32,000 employees and a budget of about 3 billion euros. She is an internationally renowned open access expert. So, may I please ask you for your presentation?
Well, first of all, I thank you for your very kind invitation. I'm impressed by your university. This is my first time in Innsbruck. And, I'm not sure I'm as expert as you think. And I've read the report of OANA, the one you mentioned, and I've been impressed by the quality and the understanding. I mean, I think there is people who have done a lot of work already in this direction. And the fact that you have signed the Berlin Declaration long ago, thanks. Actually, CNRS was one of the historical signatory on the October 2003. But my institution, I'm fighting since many years to try to have them signing, and it's not yet done. We are still progressing. Yes, when I say my institution, the French system is very complicated because I am the employed by CNRS, but I'm working at École Normale Supérieure in Paris, and in actually a laboratory doing meteorology. And though I'm physically at École Normale Supérieure, and I'm trying to convince École Normale Supérieure to sign the Berlin Declaration, and I've not yet succeeded. Okay, though I'm going to address, following what is in the policy which seems to develop in Austria about mandatory open access, that by 2025 everything should be open access. And though I want to address the following question, how to manage that all peer-reviewed. I'm going to limit myself to peer-reviewed articles because we're talking about scientific articles and the peer-reviewing is at the core of the control and checking. I mean, community checking of the content of paper to make sure there is no mistake and the work is original. The peer reviewing is an essential piece, I personally consider. We can discuss that later. So the question is, if we have this goal that all peer-reviewed scientific articles would be available in open access as soon as possible, ultimately 2025, then how to do? Okay, though I'm just going to put some very general comments and principles. Though, if we just look at what's happened today, who has access to the scientific papers? Unfortunately, very few people compared to the potential of that, because you have to be an institution who are well-funded in order to make sure that you have the subscription and you have access to your to those papers. And or in the new system, which is getting, under development, you will have to pay article processing charge. My own position is that subscription or article processing charge means the same as long as you give them to publishers, because we don't have the control of why this amount of money. This notion of price, I've managed to manipulate the system to a point that today there is no more a clear definition of what is the price of a publication, neither as subscription, neither are article processing charge. That's what I'm going to argue later on. Okay, though as a result, today, a lot of people don't have access. First, the taxpayer who are paying my salary and my work doesn't have access as long he is not himself a researcher in a rich institution. That means you have all the industry, you have all the institution, like for educational purpose, people don't have access. For information purpose to the citizens, they don't have access. When I retire, I have no more access. When I'm too young and I'm not yet in a lab, I don't have access. I mean, and if I'm, of course, in a poor country which doesn't have the budget for paying all that, I don't have access. So it's really a loss for the society. Okay, now I'm putting a very general principle. Why scientific papers are of a different nature and we cannot consider them as goods? Because scientific papers are only the support to exchange ideas, and an idea and data. So we scientists, what do we produce? We produce ideas, hopefully new ideas, and we produce data, and out of the data we obtain results by mixing theories and observational data or computational data. Now that I'm myself doing a lot of numerical simulation. Okay, though all that is what we produce. But this is non-material. It's independent of the support where I put it. It could be print on paper, it can be put on a CD, it can be put on the web. What is important are the ideas and the data contained there. And those are immaterial. They are not good. That's not something to be merchandised, to be traded. And this is unfortunately where we are today. Though the principle is that an idea is something which has to be exchanged. And an exchange, not like, okay, if I give you, for instance, this card, this is material. If I give this card to you, I don't know you, you have to compensate me with money, you see, because I lost it. If I give you my ID, I don't need compensation, because not only I kept also my ID, you have my ID, no, but, and now I have a friend to whom I can discuss my ID, improve my ID, and develop my ID, and he can spread the word to other people, and that's how IDs and scientific results disseminate. Though we have to maximize that. This is, for me, the goal. And as a principle, let's consider that IDs are not goods to be traded, but intellectual commons to be exchanged and protected. Protected why? Because, you know, the notion of commons, that means I'm thinking in French here, on sait des biens. They are things, or they are, heritage. Let's call it like that, it's a better word. They are heritage because we inherit from previous generation of ideas, scientific results, which should be protected in order to be transmitted to the next generation and spread over the world. And as a commons, it's something that should not be made proprietary to anyone. It should be used by everyone, but no one can get a monopoly on that, and the ownership in the sense of good. Okay, so this is a general principle, and I don't know if you have been following, but there is a very interesting process developing just now in France, and last week we had the debate on the parliament. We are preparing a new law called the Law for a Numerical Republic, and in this law we are a large group of people where we have tried to introduce this notion of intellectual commons. And it has been discussed extensively in the first version of the law. It was there, but finally people decide that it's so rich and new that it's not going to be written in the law, which is going to be voted very soon, but this notion has to be worked out more. And I'd like to ask you a quiz. Who introduced or developed a lot this notion of commons recently in economy? Because there are economists here. Elinor Ostrom, the first women Nobel Prize in Economics, 2009. And every time I ask people about Elinor Ostrom and those notion of commons, they don't know. We have to spread the word again. I mean, commons are something very important, and intellectual commons are something which has to be sought as new concepts for the future and, I mean, the new kind of economy we want to build. Okay, though now these slides probably everyone knows in this room how it's done, but just to recall you, though, there are three groups. We are the scientists, there are the publishers, I'm just giving the situation today, and there are the funding agencies. Though today, scientists, we write the papers, we review the papers, we check the papers, and we work as editors for journals. And those journals, with the scientists, we have created those journals. A publisher is not able to create a scientific journal, I mean, for scientists. You can do popularization of science, okay, but we are not talking about that. We are talking about creation of new scientific results and scientific theory. Okay, so we do everything I said up to here. Only at the end of peer reviewing, in the whole system, we were sending the paper, the selected paper, to a publisher. What is a publisher, traditionally? It's a printing house, because in the past, when I started doing research, we were still handwriting some mathematical papers with a lot of complicated formula, and of course, the printing work and all the typesetting was a very important, difficult issue, and there was no problem for us to pay for that service. And as you know, the model was a model of journals which were printed in paper and which had to be sent by postal mail to the libraries, and everywhere the good libraries should have a copy of any interesting papers. Though that was the old economy of publishing, and no one has never complained about paying for that because the service was obvious and real. I mean, there was no contestation of that. And then, of course, then in this whole system, you have librarians who have to negotiate the contract, and those negotiations have become, as you know here, extremely complex. So now if we are talking about pricing, because in the report of OANA, there is among the what you are organizing for the future, there will be a group identifying what is the overall price of the prison system. And you should be very careful. You should put in the price of the prison system the cost of the work of the scientist, my salary, plus the time I spend to do refereeing, I mean, as author, time as referee, time as editor, plus the time librarians spend and negotiating, plus the lawyers you have to hire for all that. I mean, the cost is getting... Don't forget, I'm sure publisher will say, no, just the article processing charge, a few little things like that. No, we have to price the whole chain. Okay, and who is paying all that? Of course, funding agencies, and behind funding agencies, taxpayer. When I was writing, I wrote I was member of the ethics committee of CNRS, and this is there that I had to deal with some problem related to LSV, and this is where I just discovered the system, because a normal scientist like me, we just don't know. When we deal with publishers, we deal only as editors, And these people, even I participated in the creation of a new journal long ago, 92, of mathematics, which was with Academic Press. And it's just academic relation, no contracts. You see, just, okay, let's do a paper and we take care, and there is no contract there. And then, you know, by the end of the 90s, big publishers managed to buy most of the other competitors. And typically our journal, I mean, when Academic Press was bought by Elsevier, our journal went to Elsevier. Though I know the system from inside, and what I complain is that when you are on the side of editors, there is no legal clear format, and when you are librarian, then on the contrary, you are stuck with very sophisticated contracts, and I mean, just not at all the same spirit. Though we need to have now the consciousness of the scientists doing the work should be much, much better. It's not the case today yet. Okay. Then, where the main flow for me, and this is what I denounced in my report to CNRS, to the Ethics Committee. Yes, I forgot to finish the point I was introducing. In my recommendation to CNRS, the main point was to say the production of a scientific result is paid on public money. But it doesn't make sense if you produce scientific research without spreading them, without, I mean, disseminating them, publishing them. Okay, therefore, the publication cost should be included in the production cost. You see, there is no reason that we think about production of science independently of the publication of science. Just the total should be made as one process in terms of funding. That's my point. I'm going to develop that, because the thing I'm pushing is that the funding agencies should provide us the infrastructure to do the publication. In the new system, we don't need publisher like in the old system. We need only those publishers who are ready to work as service to scientific publishing, but not as content owner as they are today. Because why do they are content owner? Because of this flow. The flow is that at the end of the process of the peer reviewing, when the paper, the selected paper, go to the publisher, at this stage, the publisher just asks the author to sign a copyright agreement form, which will transfer all intellectual property to the publisher. And it's made under American law, copyright law, which means that only one co-author signs, and as a result of that, you give all the content, text, figures, data in the paper, plus any supplementary material that you will put on the website of the publisher for 70 years after the death of the last co-author to die. You give them more than 100 years of owning intellectual property. And all that was paid by the taxpayer before. Though that there is a flaw there. And then, as a result of having those copyrights, then the publisher owned the journals themselves. Okay, oh no, sorry, here I've not been clear. They own the papers because the copyright is signed to them, transferred to them. But when we create a journal, and as I mentioned, I did one, automatically, because there is no contract, it's owned by the publisher. And the trademark, everything, it's owned by the publisher. Then they also own all the derivative products as databases, all bibliometrics as statistics, and this is much too much to let to them. And as a result, you know, they have this huge profit going up to 40%. Okay, another thing, as you know, there are few major publishers which are kind of dominant. And, well, I just quote three, there are like five, but that's a detail. This slide is only to show you that the largest one, which is Elsevier, which belongs to the Reed Elsevier Group, has revenue, which is much, much larger
Okay, for 2013 was 8.5 billion euro. It's much, much larger than the budget of my institution, CNRS, which is 3.3 billion euro. And we are the largest body in Europe. Though we have to realize that in terms of their revenue, chiffre d'affaires en français, they are much stronger than we. And that's part of the problem because they are kind of controlling the market and the system. And this is how now, by the transition to open access, now the publisher in fact want to, and they manage to succeed, to impose upon us the gold open access model where author or their institution, but for me it's exactly the same. We have one budget for research, you see. We should pay them article processing charge. And they decide about how much they ask. That's the flow. And I like this world map where the area of each country is proportional to the number of publications divided by the number of inhabitants, let's say, taxpayer. And you can notice that, okay, what is of course striking that many countries, all Africa, Latin America, they are in very bad situation in terms of number of published papers. But you have other countries, okay, America is about the size of the America, but you have other countries like Japan, like Germany, like England, France, where our area is much larger, which means that we publish a lot per inhabitant. And if you go to CIMAGO, and you see that, for instance, CNRS is the first in terms of number of publications. Number of publications doesn't mean quality. It just means that since we are a very large body of scientists, we are publishing more in terms of number of papers. And the next on the list is the Chinese Academy of Science, then the Russian Academy of Science, then Harvard. But as a result, those institutions like mine, where we publish a lot, what will happen if we let the gold open access model develop? We will be just either bankrupt, we have to pay article processing charge for each paper we publish, or we stop publishing. I mean, that could be another solution. Okay, though now the question is could we scientists recover control? And what I propose for that. Okay, the very first thing is that we should keep, we scientists, we should never give the copyright in this, because of course the publisher wants the copyright exclusively. When you sign a transfer, copyright transfer form, is exclusive. There is no reason it's exclusive. The only reason for exclusive is that then they are the only one owning everything. What we should do when we sign copyright, we should just cross and put non-exclusive. And among the group of people, with a group of people in the present new law we are preparing in France, I was very much pushing for a very, very simple solution that I propose to you if you are certainly lawyers. And I saw also on the list of the project from OANA that there will be a revision of your copyright law. You already had a revision last July, and you will have a new one by 2018. There is a very simple solution in that. When a scientist signs a copyright transfer form, give away their intellectual property in an exclusive way, in fact, it has no legal value because we are not in a position of any kind of negotiation. If we don't sign, the paper is not published. There is imbalance of, it's like in a contract. When you are signing a contract, it's in technically in French, we say it's léonien. It's nul et non avenu. That's a legal term in France. And if we just put that in the law, it's very simple because then everyone, I mean, you don't have the exclusivity. They can publish, but they don't own exclusively the papers. That would be a simple solution. And the new way should be that each scientist keeps a copyright and sign a license, which means
give away to anyone the authorization to publish the paper, reuse the paper, and there's so-called, you probably know that, Creative Commons license, CCBY. That means the only thing the scientist asks is that he keep attribution of the paper. And of course, it's good for science because you have to know who is responsible of the content of the paper. It's they are the author. That's the first thing. But the second thing, as important as the first thing, the ownership of the journal should not be left to the publisher. The ownership of the journal should go to the so-called editorial board, that means a group of scientists, specialists of the topic of the journal, a very, very specialized topic addressed by a journal, and who are in charge of the peer review. The difficult intellectual work is the peer reviewing, because you have to have the right specialists, and the one also who guarantee, after peer reviewing, that to their knowledge there is no mistake in the paper, and that the work is original. And it's very important, this peer reviewing process, because science is constructive. We are building on previous people's work, and through history, in fact. And also we are exchanging work with people from different countries. Though it has to be secure. If we don't do a high-quality peer reviewing, we will let wrong ideas, wrong results just circulate. So we can't. But this, the technicalities involved, the intellectual, technicalities, has to be recognized to the point that the ownership of the journal should be made to the College of Editors, which should have a legal, which should be recognized as a legal entity. Then, we the scientists, member of the editorial board, we keep the system the way it is. We don't want to be paid for that. And I've been editor for many, many years in different journals. I've never been paid. And I don't want to be paid. Because if I'm paid in addition to my salary, for me, it's not the academic practice. And the last point, funding agencies should no longer pay subscription and article processing charge directly to the publisher as long as their market is oligopolistic. If the market can return to what it was before, where you have plenty of publishers competing in a nice way between them, is different. But now we should put a lot of pressure on them in order that they don't do that, they stop doing this kind of control. So this is why we have introduced, in the group, we have the group Cost of Knowledge that you probably heard about that we launched in 2012, a boycott of Elsevier. And, in the same time we were criticizing Elsevier, we tried to propose a different system. And the different system is just what I mentioned to you. And this is some quote I'm getting from a note I wrote in 2012 about that. Neither author nor reader has to pay. The journal doesn't belong to the publisher, but to the editorial board. And, last point, very important, the dissemination of the peer-reviewed article is done through unit services whose role is to make the papers accessible for free. So now the responsibility of the funding agencies is to directly finance the infrastructure which will serve a very large number of journals for doing their publishing the publishing work. And I got this name Diamond because there is one of the treasure of the British Library which is called the Diamond Sutra, which is in fact the first printed book which were dated of 11th May 1868 because Chinese were already mastering printing but not with a mobile character like Gutenberg. But printing is an old story. And though the Diamond Sutra, they are just religious texts, the author has not been paid, no APC, the author has not paid, he has not been paid, and it was distributed to people for praying, and it was also, everything was for free. That's just why I think that's, and of course, when I picked this word, it was to make a surenchère, because that was in May 2012, and I got very shocked when, on the 29th of May, Nelly Cruz, she was vice president of the commission at that time, she addressed SCM, Science, Technology, Medicine, which is the largest lobbyist for the publisher, And she explained the new open access policy of the European Commission, the proposed one, 2012, where she was mentioning only gold and green open access. Though my point was that we should put a third model, because publisher imposed upon us two models. So the gold mean author or the institution pay for publishing, the green mean we keep the subscription model where the reader pays, and only they, after a certain embargo period that the publisher decides, you can put your paper on the repository. But that means they still control. In both systems, gold or green, the lead is still with the publisher. Though the idea that we should have a third model where the lead is to the scientists, because to the people who need publications. Okay, though the proposal is that the funding agencies directly finance those publicly owned platforms for publishing, and an important point here is that those platforms should be written with open source software in order that we can exchange. If you have a good solution here, another university, another institution can use it. Then, though, as long as we have this platform, of course, everything will be open access. And the good thing, for the first time, we will have a mechanism to control the quality of peer review. I don't know if you are aware of that, but to my experience, the quality of peer reviewing has been dropping very fast for different reasons, but the main reason is the fact that due to the very high profit publishers are making with scientific publication, they are in fact the one pushing us to publish more and more and more and more. And by publishing more and more, it's very simple, we have no time left to do high quality peer reviewing. And it's even worse, I can give you many of examples, they want themselves to control the peer reviewing, and they provide us, the editors, some and referees, some platform made by them to accelerate the peer reviewing, and even they want us to do that quasi-automatically. And we have to struggle very much against that. The high quality of peer reviewing is a guarantee that the building of our, I mean, scientific publication system is safe. If we let that out of control, we will have a lot of, as you know now, I mean, wrong papers going and bad papers and things like that. And now, if funding agencies provide those facilities, those platforms for publishing, then they will offer the service for free under the condition that they select the best journals. By journals, I mean an editorial board of high quality. And therefore, in the application procedure, those journals should have to explain how they do peer review. They have to justify the quality of their peer review. And for me, those platforms, they will work exactly like computer centers. I'm using some supercomputer centers where you not everyone has access. You have to apply. There is a kind of scientific committee check if your project is high quality. And you are given for free the access to the computer after having passing this exam. So it's exactly the same model for me for journals. The funding agencies will provide the facility, like they provide supercomputers, like they provide network, and for free, by the way. It's directly financed by them, but they check who is using it. And to have the right to use it, you have to prove that your peer reviewing is high quality. Okay, and those platforms already exist. They are a group, and not new. It's like Cielo was created in 1999. Who knows Cielo? Okay, Cielo is very important. Okay, yes, thank you, Daniel. Okay, Cielo is just Brazil. Brazil has decided that they don't want. Brazil is an exemplar country, and I have already written that in my recommendation to CNRS, that we should follow the example of Brazil for two things, because Brazil is the only case I know of which long ago were negotiating only one contract for all Brazilian institutions with the publisher. And the one contract is made public on the website, on the portal, because it's financed directly with public money. And Elsevier and other publishers accepted because there was no choice. When you have a strong negotiation and you have a state in front of publisher, they start to, well, at least in this case it was working. And then Brazil about the same years, provided directly paid by all those public agencies and also public agencies from all those countries, the money to run this platform called Cielo, where papers are open access. And many journals are just using them. Today I just went to their site. There is 1,249 journals, about 600,000 articles, and 13 million citations. Then in France, we have something a little bit the same, but much smaller size, created in 1999, but only for humanities and social science. Though they have only 420 journals, 100,000 articles, and they have 2.8 million visits per month. And that also funded only on public money. Though those examples exist and should be developed and should be copied and reproduced. Though those two platforms, unfortunately, because they were the first, they don't have, well, they have open, they can give you away their source, but you need to have, we need to have a format, a kind of standard format like you have, we have for publishing papers, for writing papers, we have LaTeX. We need this kind of open source software which will be the standard for this kind of platform. When you are the first platform, of course, you are too young and too new. Okay, concerning grid open access, I want to advertise for something we have been doing very recently in France at École Normale Supérieure, following a group of students with whom I am working. We have created, about now 5 months ago, this platform called Disseminer. So I advertise it for everyone. It's to develop the green open access, because to make scientists aware that which of their papers are already open access, and which of their papers are not open access, but could easily be made open access because the publishers allowed at least that you put your preprints in open access. So on this platform, it's very simple. You just type the name of a scientist, you pick a name, then the we harvest all over the web under this name, and we produce the list of papers. I will show you a list, a typical list. Though with that, the scientists know which paper it could upload on a repository, but he had not done it yet. And then we provide them the possibility that in one click, if he prepares a PDF file of his paper, we just deposit it in Zenodo. So Zenodo is a repository of the European Commission. It's at CERN, though it's a very good one. And because we have harvested all the metadata on the web, everything is already filled, and the scientist only should push a button to upload his paper, the PDF of the paper. I myself put only the published version. I have my papers on my website, personal website, but a personal website is not a repository, beware. When your paper is on your personal website, anyone can download it, but it's not the solution, because the day I die, my website disappears. Though it's not considered as a repository. What is considered as a repository is something institutional which will last possibly forever. And the Zenodo is one of that. And the good thing with Zenodo, I managed to put the published version on Zenodo, because the published version is the only version which I consider makes sense scientifically, because you have the right setting. If you want to quote an equation, you have the right number. If you want to quote a figure, if you want to quote a sentence, you have the right paging. We should be very careful when on repository you have many different versions of the same paper. This is creating a confusion that we should not let. Okay, though this is typically what Disseminer get out. So you have different, that means this paper is already in open access. You click here and you download the paper. This paper is not yet in open access, but the publishers allowed you have it on open access, because we check with Romeo the policy of the publisher, and then you click here, you just deposit it on Zenodo, and you have kind of statistics about how many of your paper are open access and how many are not. And then if you are an institution, you just provide the list of all your scientists, and within question of few hours of time, we produce the repository of your institution. Believe me, and the software is open source, which means everyone can use it. Of course, you need a little bit of technicalities to install it, but you can use it. And though it's made by just this group of still students, he's already postdoc, and though it's not difficult to do. You have just to have good computer scientist experts, and you should just try it yourself anyway. Conclusion, though today, the prison system today, you know it, investment for writing and peer reviewing papers are public, paid by the taxpayer, but ownership of journals and articles and the profit also from subscription and from the article processing charge, they are private. I mean, to either a commercial publisher, or even I consider that several, not all, but several academic societies, they just behave as commercial publishers. They have the same practice, and anyway, they have the same ownership. They are pretending non-profit, but in fact, they are not exactly doing the right thing. Some does. American Physical Society, it's okay. American Chemical Society, it's one of the worst cases. And I can give other names. Okay, for the future, what we want that publisher should become service provider to the publicly funded and publicly owned publishing platform. We are not making publisher out of business at all, because we, the scientists, we don't want to do the platform ourselves. We want to have publishers and specialists of because today, now the difficulty is that you have to make sure that you are interoperable, that you can just, your journal, let's say a website, should be seen everywhere. And there is a lot of technicalities there. So you hire the professional of that, who are people working for publishers today, and they're paid. It's exactly like a computer center. We still have IBM, it's not out of business. We are hiring the service of IBM, buying the machine of IBM, buying their professional, but they are not owning our work and our journals. And therefore, they no longer own the intellectual property. Though the scientific publishing tomorrow kind of dream for this long-term perspective is that all peer-reviewed scientific papers will be available in open access, and their content usable, very important, like text and data mining, as you know, to anyone and to any institution, and will be protected as intellectual commons. So there is this idea that this should be put in some law, and also this text and data mining and all that should be put in the law. As you know, it's going to be under discussion very soon at European level. Okay, though. Some, if you want more information, I have several websites. On this one, which is a little bit private, but I put a lot of materials. You have plenty, you cannot, I didn't index it, which means if you just Google, you don't find it. But if you just write my website, the one where my work, plus this Boycott Elsevier, then you have a very large number of things. And even if you're interested about the present law for the numerical republic we have in France, I've put a lot about that, but I can't tell you where it is. You can find it. This is my kind of database on this question of open access. Well, sorry, I've been long. And thank you for your patience.
Yeah, thank you very much for this interesting presentation. If there are some questions now concerning the OEU presentation, I would say we have these questions now and move on to the next presentation after these questions. Are there any questions or comments?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the national open access policy in France, or is it based on every institution?
Okay, it's a good question. As far as I know, it's not yet as advanced as what I saw in Sweden, Finland, Norway, what Austria is trying to do to, and okay, we have already made some good advance with a negotiation for publishing the negotiation for subscription, which is now kind of converted into article processing charges. You know, we have a consortium called Couperin, like you do have one also, I forgot the name in Austria. You have a consortium that means a group of universities gathering together to do national negotiation with the publisher. So France has that under the name Couperin. And France is doing what you're also proposing in the OANA report, that also the Max Planck Society is proposing, that also Scope 3 has been doing. I'm not myself in favor of that. But as a transition, I completely understand very well, to avoid the so-called hybrid model, where the subscription costs are paid plus the article processing charges are paid, which you want the risk to pay twice, you manage to make sure that when you negotiate the subscription contract, you reduce the cost of the contract by the amount of article processing charge paid, and it's more like very soon the same contract will be for both, and there will be just one kind of publication, so-called open access, which article processing charge paid instead of subscription. But for me, the flow of this system is that we just let the publisher ask how much money they want, and it's very dangerous. And second, you maintain the prison system where we scientists are completely immature people. We are like children, where we have everything for free, we have no idea where the money is coming from, we don't want to know, we don't want to waste our time, we have a very nice life just not knowing, and we have too much work anyway to spend our energy trying to understand the system, which is much too complicated. Though you have to be aware that very, very few scientists are ready to help you in the process for several reasons. The first reason, if the scientist doesn't have yet a permanent position, they should not even sing to the system. They should just play the game to get their position. Boycott, we just told the young not to boycott. The boycott is only for people like me, where we have nothing to, our career is, well, I'm still publishing, but somewhere I don't mind, but my career doesn't depend on that. We are also to be very, very careful about several countries and more countries where the salary is indexed on how many papers they publish and where do they publish. I have some American colleagues, every time we publish with this and this publisher, oh great, I'm going to get $2,000 more. This is disgusting. Because we just maintain a very nasty system. You have China, Chile, several countries, and the list is getting larger, where the salary is made on this non-individual part of the salary. Though we are trapped. Though, I will not answer precisely your question, I think we are quite advanced in terms of, let's say, world open access trend in France, by doing this kind of scope 3 policy. But, at the head of CNRS, then, you know, the problem, I'm going to tell very plain, the lobbying of the publisher is so strong that we have very little room for moving, first. Second, we should be conscious that the publisher, they own all the bibliometrics. They are there. I mean, Scopus belong to LSE, Web of Science belong to Thomson Reuters, and our kind of administration or manager, they are very happy to have those tools. And now, as you know, Thomson Reuters proposed Insight, and Elsevier proposed SciVal, which are tools to pilot, to maneuver, to try to see, oh, is your chemistry department getting better compared to World average and all that. And they are so good at marketing that you get trapped, and they are really controlling not only the publishing system, they are controlling all the evaluation of science. And so, yes, sir, though, from what I've observed on the French scene, or institution, in particular CNRS, they are not clear on that. They are kind of stuck. And only very marginally, and even I don't want to tell you that too much, we are preparing platform. We are doing some platform for mathematics. But I'm going to, exactly on the model of diamond and Grand Excel, but I'm going to speak about that when it's gone. Because if not, there's always a danger that you have a little grass like that, you just run like that. So my kind of advice to you, if you want to do this, either you do it at a very large scale, which means global, between European level is one good global scale, you do those platforms at this scale, and then for the publisher cannot do much, because it's really large scale, the same scale than where you work, because you work at global scale. Or if you want to do something with this new model locally, you do it very quietly, not at your life, but you do. And you will find out that then it doesn't cost much money. The pricing is going to be very important, and I like the experiments that you propose with OANA, because it's also written down that as soon as the new system will be under actually work, you will keep a very clear follow-up about the cost. And of course, the goal will be to reduce the cost. And I don't buy the prison point that I read the report of the Max Planck Society. The Max Planck Society says, oh, good news, I mean, our article processing charge are not going to cost more than the prison system. Oh, well, no problem, then let's go. This is not this, I mean, we are funding science, we are not funding publishers.
Thank you. Yes?
So most publishers, at least in my domain, allow us to upload our publications on our personal or institutional homepages, right? So institutions like Dissemin or ResearchGate are neither my personal homepage nor my institutional homepage. What should I do?
Okay. Dissemin is not a platform. It's a tool to see what you are available or not. It's not a repository, it's a platform.
Okay, so they just link to that.
But it's not a repository, no. And ResearchGate, for me, danger, big danger, because it's privacy board. You see, so for me, ResearchGate, even at Dissemin, we were thinking maybe to kind of harvest also on that. We decided not. And another thing, that a thing very important also, and we have made a lot of thought at Dissemin about that. The good people to do these new tools we need, new service for helping scientists to have innovative new models for publishing, will be started. But what is the model of a startup? A startup is financed first on public money to just get started, and it's in the OANA project that is forming a startup because they want to develop, and it makes sense. That was Austria, because as far as I've seen, we don't have large-scale scientific publisher, and for you it would be a nice way to enter on this kind of new market of having scientific publication with this new service, not content owner, but service producing. But then you pay a startup, and the startup produces something really great. But the model of the startup is to be bought later by a big guy who just put a lot of money to have this global development at very large scale. And that's where is the problem, because who will buy your beautiful startup, Elsevier or Springer or those big guys? And exactly what has happened before, you know, with Mendeley, was bought by Elsevier, with Pew is a Danmark government to put some money to start a great kind of a list of experts of different fields for Denmark. And then Elsevier bought our model is, I should have mentioned that before, but I was late in my talk. You see, we create this very tiny non-profit association called Committee for Accessibility of Publication in Science and Humanities. And because up to, we don't want to be owned by
by anyone. We are not institutional, we are just a group of humans, and we pay ourselves all those websites where we have the same in is in there. Okay? And because it's open source, we have no value. We don't want to have any value on the market because we want that people just reproduce, I mean, use of open source software. We don't want to be bought. And the only way to not to be bought is to have no value. No, I'm very serious here. We are servicing. And those students, they are from Ecole Normale Supérieure. Probably you know that circumstance is a little bit strange, but at Ecole Normale Supérieure, I mean, it's very, very selective, but when you enter, you are paid to study. So they are the salary, even as students. You see, though, that's part of their work. No, I insist on that. The startup is good as long as you have kind of state money, in a large bunch of money where you can buy the startup yourself, publicly, I mean, own. If those platforms are publicly owned, it's okay. If they are publicly started and then bought by a private company, you have just shooting your foot.
One more question.
Sure.
So you said we should avoid circulating different versions of our papers to avoid confusions over page numbers and figure numbers and so on. So we should only post the official published version. But most publishers prohibit us from
Yeah, but then there is no problem. For the last 15 years, as soon as I made my website, I've only put the published version because for me, they think it's a reference version. They will not sue an individual scientist. They have not been sued ever an individual scientist. So every scientist, I mean, when it's on your personal website, it's kind of private. You put the published version. Then institutional literature have to be careful just because Elsevier and others have been sued. I mean, have been sued repository, like the main problem is the research in academia. We really love when Elsevier does that because every time our boycott, the number of people we just get a boost in the number of people who are doing Elsevier. We can track but they can do it because technically, I can tell you more in detail for the French, the case of the French, because when I did this advice for the ethics committee of CNRS, I checked the case. My case, because I have all my papers on my website and I have signed the copyright agreement. So I'm against copyright law. But luckily, France is not under copyright law. We are under all the rights law. And probably Austria, you are too, I think. Yeah. You have different law. And a lot of countries are under all the rights law. You have large part of Europe, besides England, maybe Holland. I'm not sure in the case of Holland. Everything else is authorized law. You have Japan, you have Korea, and you have all Latin America. So we have way to impose the publisher authorized law. And under authorized law, the copyright agreement for this sign has no legal value, and I've consulted several lawyers, and even we can sue a publisher for counterfeit, because what we have signed doesn't have legal value under French law. And the published version is on my website, which is in France and all that. Now, the case is really complex. Of course, I will argue that it has this final setting, but I've never given them the right to publish my paper, because what they ask me to sign has no value under French law. Because it should be a contract, and the contract should be compensated by money, by giving away my contract. I'm not compensated by money, and it's not a contract. And very technically, I should sign a different contract for different products, while under copyright you sign for everything. I'm sorry, I'm technical, but really we need lawyers, and I'm happy to be in the university where I'm sure you have good lawyers, and it would be great if some student and professor that's from the law school kind of collaborate with scientists to try to clarify all that. And also, as you know, we don't have international copyright law. And that's a weakness because
that is not seem very clear. And mine seems on a clear judge the law of the strongest party. And of course, those publishers are the best lawyer you can hire on the market.
Yeah, we are negotiating some transatlantic contract. What we know so far, or maybe we don't know, because we just don't know much about it, it's not getting better. And that's the issue. You know, I think I very much agree with what you said, but I think the other way to go is the way at the end Brazil did it. Yeah, we need just a big institution like the European to do such things, because in your statement earlier, you actually described how we are ongoing failing about this salary related to output and stuff like that. Yeah? It's even getting worse. But thank you very much.
I'm personally very worried about the case of China, because China, you know, traditionally, they have no copyright law. They are the only country without copyright law. Russia, India, China. They are big, big guys. And because they are under American influence, they will implement the copyright law. But there is a time where it's not yet done, and you can compete there. And I know very well the people of Creative Commons. Mm-hmm. In Creative Commons, there are lawyers there. And I think they have achieved quite interesting work by managing at least to have many different laws compatible to the Creative Commons license, or vice versa, with the Creative Commons license compatible to many countries' law. I had a lot of discussion with those people. The person who is head of the kind of I don't know the mission, Conseil d'administration for Creative Commons, is Paul West, who was the head of the law school of Stanford. I know him personally, and his wife, she's copyright lawyer, and we have, I put her the case in front of her, this case about this French copyright, the author right law versus copyright law, and how we have been sued by putting my own paper, a published version, on my own website. She thinks that I will be sued, I will be sued under American law, I will be condemned under American law, no doubt. But then they have to come to France to implement the fact that I'm condemned. And then, no problem, then I will apply French law, and then I sue them for contempt. But the problem is bilateral agreement between France and United States, which probably states that we apply American law even if the crime is committed in France. That's where I have the risk to see. And those bilateral agreements, they are kind of secret as long as there is no jurisprudence. And I don't want to be the first to do jurisprudence. That's, you know, this is typically where we are. But as a group, the scientists, we should be strong, because we are doing all the job, and we are paid by large states, which can define, protect us. I just said one more point, important for me, because I was very shocked. When I started working on this case for ethics committee of Senators, one of the first things I did was to go to see the lawyer of Senators. Three person, I bring them 10 copyright agreement forms saying, what is the risk? I've signed that and I've put this. They just watch and say, no, we know nothing about copyright. We are species of patent, but not copyright. I say, why? Because copyright belongs to you, scientists, and not to Senators, so we don't care. And then that's the law, that's the French law. I mean, and it's because of that I can sign the copyright form, because it belongs to me, and the publisher know that. You see, and Senators said, I don't care. But when I wrote my recommendation, I put a very kind of tricky loop saying, there is a law which says in France that you should not be working against your employer. Okay? But more I publish, more I work against my employer, because I'm giving for free my ownership, telecom ownership, and it's because of that then they will, we shall sell those papers back to my employer, and with secret contract, because this is a technical issue, that the fact that contracts are secret is in fact a Bruxelles, it's not a law, but kind of obligation, let's say, from Bruxelles, where it's an exception to the public market law in order to protect intellectual property. It's only because the publisher has intellectual property of my work, because I gave them, that the contracts are secret. You see? This is why I really insist, if we manage through legal procedure that when a scientist gives the copyright away exclusively, it has no legal value, it's only as non-exclusive. If we do that, we solve all those problems. Sorry, I'm not a lawyer, I want to...
I remember the law back in the day, so it's difficult because from my experience, many of the departments are stuck in their history. You know, the department which is deals with property, the natural property, they are just stuck in their history. And of course they make money with the big companies who deal with... so it's A, really hard to find people who think a little bit outside of their history, and are not connected too much with...
Here I have a very, very simple-minded argument. We are at a revolution, which means we are not working by continuity. Just imagine, we are in 1490, printing has been recently developed. You have the very large corporation of copies who go to see the politician to complain that they are losing their business. Okay? And they also argue that they are anyway the specialists of production of those intellectual texts because they have all the ownership of all that from the past, exactly this argument. And then the government, let's say, was convinced by the argument and said, okay, now, of course, you are the one who are going to control the printing industry because you are the specialist of publication. Machine. Okay? And then they get the control, and of course they will do something very simple, they will just publish a book at the rate of a copies publish write down a book himself, though. You will have one book per year, and you will just have missed the revolution. As simple as that. And the next step is, do you think the production of Renaissance ID we have developed if we have let the copies control the printing. So now it's exactly the same. Do we let the printer control the electronic publication, which has nothing to do technically with the printing industry? As simple as that for me. But you have to think in disruption, though you should not argue historically.
Yeah, I'm trying this since 20 years, 25 years, but I'm still optimistic.
Okay, well, I would love to have private discussions.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.